Good afternoon, and welcome to the Smoke and Mirrors show. This is your host, Rob Boyd, and here bringing you the show on Monday, February the 16th, 2017. January. I have two very special guests with me today. We're going to be talking about alternative energy, free energy, alternative health, things like that. And then we'll talk about one of our guests' inventions. And his name is Larry Woods. He's a returning guest. He's been here with us before, so you guys know him already. How you doing today, Larry?
Doing real good. Thanks for having me back, Rob.
You're most welcome. And our other guest today is an old-time, long-time researcher and into alternative technology. He's the owner of the KeeleyNet website. Started out as a BBS nearly 30 years ago. And so he's been in the game a very long time. So how are you doing today, Jerry?
Pretty good, Rob. Nice to talk to you. Nice to hear Roy. I mean, Larry, sorry.
Yeah, thanks for coming on with us. If you don't mind, would you just give us a little background, what got you into alternative science and things like that, and what inspired you to start the KeeleyNet BBS and such?
It's a long history. I guess in my teens, I got interested in magic. And I knew science, but magic was interesting. So I did a lot of experiments, and some things worked, some things didn't. Then I found out about radionics. And then I met Dr. Hieronymus before he died. Then I met Peter Kelly. So I got into electronics, went to school to study electronics. That's what I did all my life. So then I got into science, and I set up the KeeleyNet BBS in 1988 because we kept photocopying. You know, every month I would photocopy tons of information to share with people. I said, this is stupid. You know, I put this all on BBS. People would download it. So we did that, and we had like 2,000 members even back then. And then in 1994, Bill Beatty in Seattle, that runs the amateur science website, excellent website, by the way, Bill's a good guy. He said, you need to get on the internet. And I said, I don't want to do that. I thought it was all chats and flamers and, you know, people that downsay everything. They're not interested in it like this. And so he said, do you mind if I take your files and post them to the internet? So all my files have headers on them that show where it come from KeeleyNet, and had the address and telephone and all that. And so when I got on the internet, suddenly I already had presence. You know, suddenly I had tens of thousands of people that had been reading my stuff because Bill had been spreading it around. So then I bought the name KeeleyNet, and it's been doing that since 28 years this last July. Still no working free energy device on the market. No anti-gravity device and no rejuvenation that I know of. There might be something out there, but I'd sure like to know about it and use it if possible.
Right. Absolutely. So thank you for that background. So I'd like to basically get both of you guys' opinions on what you think is the most promising thing you've seen lately as far as a free energy or relatively free energy device. Of course, we know about Larry's coil.
Can I talk to Jerry for a minute?
Absolutely.
Jerry, it's real interesting that you're interested in magic, because all of the magic that was performed in the past or is performed in today's world, you have to have the proper language spoken in the proper sequence of words. You have to have the proper metals involved with it, the silver and the copper and all the different other metals that they use. And you have to have a symbol to focus your attention to. These are all things that I believe are the ways that the ancients made their equipment work. All of those chants and the drums and the horns, all of those create frequencies. And through frequency, I think that's how most of the ancient energy devices worked.
Larry, I think you're exactly on the money on every bit of that. And you mentioned alchemy with the mixing of the metals and all the, you know, tinctures that they get from, like, coffee. You heat coffee up and you have this oily film on the top. That is the essence, the spirit, the life of the coffee. I used to know Hans Ninsel in Dallas. He was a major alchemist, and he used to give classes in his garage. And he used to make oil of egg and oil of gold and oil of antimony and all kinds of things. He said you could take a drop of oil of gold, and have somebody that's having a heart attack, you put a drop of oil of gold underneath their tongue, it would instantly stop their heart attack and heal their heart. That's what he said. And he showed me all of this oil of gold. He showed me how he made all this stuff. He's dead now. He had a lot of problems. His wife died first, and he died. But he's a brilliant guy, Hans Ninsel, Nintzel. I've got a little thing on my website about his death, but he's a good guy. I really miss him. But the alchemy's correct, and all that with geometry and the horns and the Tibetan and all that, exactly on the money, and about the sequence and everything has to be just right. It's kind of like a geometry. It's really not all that complicated, but you're right that I think the ancients had technology. They didn't have the kind of technology we have. They had technology using natural materials. I just wrote about this the other day. You must be reading my mind.
Yeah, like with Michael Tellinger and all his work in Africa, he's found over 2 million stone circles that are made out of stones that will ring when you hit them. That means all those people had to do was sing their song, chant their prayer, whatever, create a frequency that was instilled in those stones to make them do whatever they did.
Yes, I've seen Tellinger. It's a really interesting video. Him and Wilcock, he has a good – I got a listing about him. It's a good and evil video. It's pretty good. He's talking about giants in the earth in those days and how they're human giants that were 20 feet tall. I've seen things in India, people that were 10,000 years old, but they were 20 feet tall. The longer you live, the bigger you get. And so, but the thing about Tellinger and about the stones and all, there used to be a lot of legends from Ireland and in Scotland, mostly Ireland, and they talk about the druids used to stand on these big rocks and sing to the rocks and fly them around like a taxi. They'd take them wherever they wanted to go. But can you imagine this guy out there with this rod and he's singing and there's three or four guys, he's got passengers, and he's flying around on these big stones. I'm sure they didn't go very fast, but who cares? You're flying. So
yeah, well, that's the same technology that Lee Scowden used in his PMH. He called it a perpetual motion holder. I call it a permanent magnet holder. But all he did was instill that frequency into the magnet that would levitate that stone and take it out to the stone and move it. So, yeah, all this, our technology is still based on burning something to make a fire so that we can have a steam engine. The Romans used steam power 2,000 years ago. It's time to move on.
Yeah, you mentioned Lee Scowden. I've been out there and climbed all over that place. And saw the room with I call it a magnetic siren. It's really a generator, but it's a siren is what it's doing. Because when he spins this thing at different velocities, it runs through a whole range of frequencies. Very, very high power, short duration spikes. And that's what resonated with these stones to, I think, actually levitate. There's a guy on the video. There's two guys, in fact, on YouTube right now. I just posted one of them. And this guy spent a lot of money, and he's actually duplicated every single thing that Lee Scowden has done using mechanical methods. And it's really tedious to do it. I still think it was done with levitation. There are too many hints in history where they talk about sound moves matter. It's just too many. And we're too stupid to see it.
Lee Scowden learned what he knew from Daniel Davis' Manual of Magnetism, written in 1842. It goes through Lee Scowden's magnetic current is step by step follows that book.
I haven't heard that,
Jerry.
I'll find it and post the link.
I will drop it in your Skype box, Larry. I've got that file.
Oh, okay, great.
Larry, Rob and I were talking about your videos. Is there some way to transcribe that onto text? Because a lot of people, they like to be able to pass a URL that they can go read and study all about what you're doing, Is there a way you can get some of that stuff on paper or in print, so instead of just voice?
Well, right now we're not far enough along with it to share too much of it. I can give you the basic principles of it, and there's absolutely nothing brand new about it. The very newest thing is Vortex Math, and that simply plots the pattern onto the toroidal shape. So we Solomon Math, Pyramid Math, that's what describes what our coil looks like. We'll get into the coil a little bit later on in the second half, and I'll try to discuss that in depth.
Okay, Rob and I had talked about the Rodin coils. Rodin, R-O-D-I-N? He's supposed to have strange effects.
Yeah. Well, see, Marco Rodin has never, ever in his life wound a coil. He developed a math that is such a good math that you can even plot what the missing parts of DNA should be so that we can fill in all those parts and be all we can be. But he hasn't worked on any coils whatsoever, and a lot of the people that are working on the same style of coil that they call a Rodin coil have missed a few very, very important phenomena that happen at different angles in a coil. And because of that, their coils heat up. Their coils produce too much ozone. In fact, some of them produce enough ozone to kill bed bugs. Yeah. Okay, first of all, every single coil out there is wonderful. Every single coil out there does something. Okay? Some of them are just more efficient than others, and some of them are safer to operate around people outside of a Faraday cage than others. That's all. Why do you think that transformer, other than keeping you from touching it, has a big metal housing around it?
Right.
That basically makes it a Faraday cage. So, there's just some that are better than others. And some that are specific purpose.
I always thought the laminar iron cores and transformers are to concentrate the magnetic force, and the case around it is because those things get really hot and they don't want you to touch them. You know, I don't think it has anything to do with the, vortex right there. I'm sorry, but I did electronics for 25 years fixing big million-dollar machines in three companies, so I've been around a lot of electronics, and it's pretty simple, really. So.
The way we feel about the iron core is that limits the magnetic field. Once that iron core gets saturated, the magnetic field is confined to a single purpose.
That's true, and that's why superconductivity, and anytime you cool anything, it runs better because you have less resistance. But that you can also do it with the back EMF, which is what Tiwari is doing with his. He's capturing the BNF and folding it back in to get over unity. Tiwari over in India, he's got a working free energy device right now. I'm thinking 300% or 130%. I'd have to look it up.
I believe it's
130%, yeah.
You can also do that by increasing the magnetic field. And since you're in electronics, you know that when you increase the magnetic field, you reduce the resistance of the conductor. Magnetically, that's what they're using in the super new computers, I think. But that's what we've done through geometry. I might as well go ahead and start talking a little bit about it. Standard electrical formula. 1 volt through 1 ohm of conductor yields 1 amp. Right? That's standard formula. Mm-hmm. We put 1 volt through 0.46 ohms and get 10 amps. So it's all through the magnetic field. We built a standard toroidal coil and then put one of ours with the same amount of wire on it, same conductors, next to it. The standard coil got 4,000 milligauss of magnetic energy in the vortex. Ours, without the iron core, air core only, six circuits, at 3 volts got 35,000 milliamps. And that's on a 0.46 ohm resistance.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but this kind of thing, I need to see that on paper, see that circuit and see the description on the paper to be able to understand everything about what you're saying. I hear you, but I'm not trying to put this together. I'm going, I don't know about that. But if it's on paper, I can see it better, you know?
Well, yeah. Okay. We've eliminated the hysteresis by making the magnetic field cross itself at nothing other than 90 or 180 degrees.
You know, I always heard when you cross, when you flip a cross magnetic field, that it annihilates whatever's attached to it.
Yeah, and that's what most of the people are doing when they're making their style of coils by crisscrossing the wires.
Yeah, canceling stuff.
Yeah, it's canceling itself, and it's causing heat.
Oh, yeah.
We don't develop any heat at all at anything under 3 times the rated amperage of the wire. We're putting 30 amps through wire rated for 0.9 amps and getting zero temperature rise.
What's the gauge of the wire?
22.
Is it solid core or stranded?
Solid.
Wow. 22 gauge wire?
Yes, sir. Wow. 22 gauge magnet wire rated for 0.9 amps.
Wow.
And we're putting 30 amps through it with zero temperature rise.
What are you using for your load?
For the load, we simply have a power supply that supplies the power. The load we've been using have been servo motors, 3 and 6 volt servo motors that all run this. The reason we're using 3 volts is because if we put much more than 3 volts through this wire, it will eat up.
Yeah.
4 volts would give us 40 amps. And that's number 10 wire. That's number 8 wire. So, effectively, you can use 10 wire sizes smaller on an air core and get the same amperage output. When we add a load, when we add more servo motors to it, we don't get a voltage drop. When you add a load to any circuit, you get a voltage drop. We don't get a voltage drop. What we get is an amperage increase that's proportionate to the added load, and that amperage increase intensifies, magnifies, increases the magnetic field so that that reduces the resistance of the wire magnetically. They ask for more load up to a certain point.
Moray King would say you were tapping into the ZPE because it's supposed to self-regulate so that any you can just keep it. Once you get an opening, it's like a kid with his finger in the dam, and when he pulls his finger out, just so much power comes out. But if you open, make the hole bigger, you can make more power come out, so you can add more and more devices and get more and more energy with the same device. We had a guy years ago that claimed he had a device like that, and he said he accidentally he was saying 10 kilowatts or something. And he was saying he accidentally left it, one of the wires touching the ground, the earth. And when he come home, the whole thing had melted because it was trying to power the earth.
Uh-huh.
So, yep. And he was never able to duplicate the circuit. That's what he tells us. So we don't know if he's full of BS or what, but it was a great story. It was running. We were running on the BBS for like 3 months. We had a special section called Pinky in the Brain.
I remember that.
To talk about this, and this guy was trying to give us as much detail as he could, but it's all history now. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember
nothing
that.
Nothing came of it.
Good stuff.
Rob, we've cut you plumb out.
Yeah, that's my whole purpose is to bring you guys together. I knew you guys would hit it off. You both have a lot of the same similar ideas and the variety of interests with the electronics and then the health stuff. We haven't even got into that yet. Yeah, I knew you guys would.
I'm really impressed that Larry, that you're onto this thing about alchemy and the using the natural materials. That's really good because most people don't even consider that. You know, it's got to be modern electronics with, you know, capacitors, inductors, resistors, and they don't think about crystals and about coils of wire and about the mixtures of different minerals and metals together, and that you get all kinds of strange effects. I don't know if you know the guy, that wrote the two books. What's his name right off the bat? Anyway, he the books give all these strange experiments that, he did. It's hundreds and hundreds of experiments where he said that you could use. He said lead oxide was as sensitive as human flesh, that it could be synthesized to where it could pick up signals and things just like a human could. What's that guy's name?
I'm trying to think of it too.
Gustave Le Bon. And he did all these experiments with radioactivity. And, you know, during the war, when they were doing the Manhattan Project, the government went out to all the libraries and pulled out any books that had anything to do with radioactivity. Some of them, they actually took the books out. Some of them, they just took out the relevant parts and put the books back in the libraries. They took out Gustave Le Bon's books because they were all about radioactivity. And they were never put back in the library, so they're really, really hard to find. And this was like 10, 20 years ago. I was looking for them, and it turned out Tom Brown was running Borderlands research, and some old man had a copy in his library, and he sent it into Borderlands, and they reprinted it, and they sold, I think it was $50 for the set, just two of them. But they are fabulous books. You can sit there and read them, and you just go, oh, man, I never heard of that, never thought of that. He's got all these experiments that he did and shows his results. He said, do it yourself. You know, they're brilliant. Another guy that did really cool experiments with minerals and but he's using plants was Chandra Bose in India. And he did amazing things with he talks about metals and things were synthesized to the point that they were almost alive. But you think about it, artificial intelligence, you know, and put that all together with all these living mechanical, they're not really mechanical, they're natural elements. And you could have a whole new life form. So
we got hold of a copy of how the alchemists made the metals for the Vimana and how they made the Vimana. That's just amazing. And we need a chemistry department. And they've got complete instructions on how to alchemically make the metals and how to make the motors and everything. And most of those motors are Schauberger designs. Victor Schauberger is one of my heroes. That's where we got our magnetic drive system from. We just changed over from air pressure to magnetics, and it all worked.
You know, you mentioned the Vimanas. I know those documents you're talking about. They found all these papers, and they were supposed to translate them. The problem is that they use a lot of words that we don't know what they're talking about. The words don't fit modern explanation. We don't know what it is. They give this element and that element and mix it all together. And they said there's like 49 different types of fire. What the hell is that? You know, I don't know if they're referring to electric or what.
No, they're talking about the different body chakras and the acupuncture pressure points on the body, as well as like Paku is, it means flowing through. So These funny words that they're saying are out of the Hindu religion that speak about states of mind, how things flow, whether you put a positive thing with a negative thing, things like that. It conveys a concept.
I understood that they were actually a part of their ship, like communicated with their ship. Machine itself, you know, it's like I don't know if it's telepathy or what, but they're like mind control. They could under the machine. They could send commands and it would do what they said. So there's a lot of stories like that. So.
It's like Vedic math. Vedic math is the simplest math in the world. However, you've got to memorize a few stories so that you'll know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I've seen that. You mentioned Schauberger with implosion theory. Yeah, I don't know if you heard about the Richard Klemm engine. Richard Klemm, C-L-E-M.
I don't think so.
He lived in a little town called near Carrollton, Flower Mound, Texas. Yeah. And he didn't have an education. He couldn't read. He couldn't write. But his daughter could. And he invented this machine that was a turbine in a box. They call it tornado in a box. And it's like Schauberger, absolutely. And it had a turbine, and it had all these little needles on the rim at the bottom of the turbine, the biggest part. And they would, it had spirals that ran down this cone, and the spirals come out on these points, and the liquid would be shot out of those needles to give it pressure to make this thing spin. So supposedly he was getting 325 horsepower, and he was using Mazola cooking oil because it had to get up to, I think, 310 degrees, and anything else would break down, but Mazola would not. And once it got to 310 degrees, suddenly it has negative resistance, and it starts pulling itself. And it starts running itself. You start out with a pump to get it started, get up to pressure and speed. And once it reached that, it started running by itself. And supposedly, there's one of these things that buried 6 foot underground and out near Lake Dallas. And they say it's been running this farm for years and years, but they don't want to bring it up. So nobody's been able to duplicate Tim's machine. So.
Fascinating.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, I just posted your link, Jerry, in the chat room and the link you have on your site to the Klim Engine Reborn that you did in 2009.
Yeah, but it'd be better to use go to the Klim Index, because I have all the Klim files. We have like 6 different Klim files. So I actually tracked down his daughter and met her, Teresa, and she died about 2-3 years ago from cancer. But I got to meet her, and she told us a lot of stories and things and showed us some things. But her son would she showed us a diagram, a little booklet that Klim put out. They had the whole motor broken down into pieces, into parts. They had each of the parts were named. On one side of the page, all the parts were pointing to on the opposite, on another page. And her son tore the thing in half and said, "We're not going to let you see this because you might figure it out." Oh, come on, man. We had that figured out a long time ago. We just had the money to build it. So.
Right.
But there's a lot of people who have tried Klim, but they haven't been able to get it yet. It uses nonlinear phenomena. That's the problem, you know, where you put in a 1 and you get 20 out, you know, as opposed to linear phenomena, it's 1 to 1 to 1, you know, it adds up. But with nonlinear phenomena, it jumps. You don't know. It's like what they talk about, chaos theory, where a butterfly flaps his wing and it causes a hurricane in Cuba, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep. I'd like to talk a little bit about Keeley. Obviously, that's Keeley.
Ooh.
John Whirl Keeley, the man you named your website and your BBS after, and his research into harmonics and resonance and things like that.
Okay.
I know the machines that he worked on basically ran on sound. I mean, you can explain it a lot better than I can, Jerry.
Yes, very, very precisely tuned. You can look at his machines and see the complexity of them. They were, and the thing is, people complain. They say, "Well, he spent a lot of money in his life, you know, from investors, particularly Bloomfield Moore, she was a rich philanthropist lady that gave money." But remember, it's not like, you know, Tesla. All he had to do is change a couple of resistors and capacitors and condensers and coils. But Keeley couldn't do that. He had to build a whole new machine. So he had all these cratered machines out in the back. That, you know, he'd make a little change and it wouldn't work, and he'd try and make it run, but he had to retune every single machine. The coolest story about Keeley, the one I love the best, there's a picture of this machine, and it's a big ball, it's a ball about the size of a basketball, and it's sitting on the table, and around it, there's all these different balls of different sizes, and that the big ball represents the sun,
right.
And all these little balls represent all the planets. So now, supposedly, Keeley, they had the World Fair in Philadelphia and New York, and I forget where it was. Anyway, back in Keeley's time, and John Jacob Astor, remember the Astor Hotel? He had all this money, and he had been hearing about Keeley, so Keeley wanted to try and get him to be an investor because Bloomfield Moore was hesitating because she was hearing bad things about Keeley. So. Keeley invited Astor and some people to come to his lab. He's going to show them one of his unique experiments. So he shows them this table with all these balls on it, and he goes to this machine. It's a basically like an organ, and he plays these notes, and the balls all started spinning very slowly in the table. They were, you know, in their mount. And the big the big ball floated up in the air, and the little balls floated up in the air all together. And then when they reached like a foot below the ceiling, all the balls separated to match the orbits of the planets, and they were spinning around just like a small solar system,
right,
like a planetarium, but for real, with real mass. And
yeah.
John Astor, they were all just thrilled to see this because it was an incredible thing. And Astor, the story is Astor reached up and grabbed one of these balls, and it drug him around the lab as it's rotating. I'd love to see that as a video. It'd be really cool, you know. So.
Yeah.
But that's Keeley's understanding of nature and what they call it, the Bode's Law, how the planets are separated by a certain distance.
Right.
So, and it's all mathematics. Everything, you know, ties together.
Exactly.
The other thing about Keeley, he's supposed to have said that 42.8 cycles per second, 42.8 kilohertz would explode water, would instantly break it down into hydrogen and oxygen, and even below that, there are elements below what we think is the final element. And he also had an etheric motor that ran off of zero point energy that would rip apart 3-inch rope, and just they said it would pop it just like it was a thread. And what else? Oh, he had a flying machine. That's the coolest thing. A flying machine that ran on sound that he demonstrated to the United States Army.
Right.
And it was supposed to do, 600 miles an hour? And it built like a bubble around it. You can't see it, but he's inside this bubble. And they said when he did this experiment, he went like a mile and picked up something a mile away and come back. And it happened real fast. And when he got back, not a hair was munched on his head. He also had an acoustic cannon that he demonstrated to the military. And they didn't buy any of that. So, another thing about Keeley, if you look at that time, there were all these stories about the mystery airships, all these flying machines flying all over the United States, all over the world.
Yeah.
There's two books, one by Wally Cheriton on the Texas airships. But the cool thing, they don't know who these people were, but a lot of them were Americans, some of them were Germans, but they would never give the details. I think Keeley actually was flying his machine around, maybe renting them for hauling whatever, just to show it to investors. And that's what accounts for some of those mystery airships.
Yeah, well, right. They talk about
an old man with a beard and his nephew.
Yeah. Right after he did that demonstration with the military, they kind of snatched him up, didn't they?
No, they wouldn't have nothing to do with it. They said it was too complicated because his machines were all acoustic, and they had to all be tuned and had vibrating bars and a hollow cylinder that acts like organ pipes,
right,
and all kinds of things, a rod that acts to suppress local sounds like noise. Noise canceling, so they could get a pure signal, a pure frequency.
Okay.
But I think everybody's interested in Keeley because of the 42.8 kilohertz, thinking that if we could do that to a car, and you could just put a drop into a chamber and then blow it up and get, 30,000 pounds per square inch, and then you just bleed that 30,000 out to run the pistons of a car or a motor, you've got free energy, all you could possibly want.
So many different ways. We've got to get all these people together and actually start applying this stuff to practical application.
I think the best thing people can do to understand, there's lots of ways to do things. You get magnetics, you use gravitics, you use inertia, you use electrostatics. But I think the most natural way is to actually tap into the local zero-point energy, which is a pressure that comes in from space and pushes all mass together.
Okay.
As Walter Wright used to talk about, he said if gravity is a pulling force, the universe would be all clumped together like a bunch of grapes. So that's not the real story.
Right,
actually, it's
right.
Pressure from space pushing everything together, like flies being blown onto a wire screen.
Uh-huh.
And because of that, once you understand about zero point energy, you know there's an incredible amount of energy out there. And that if you can create a high intensity sharp, short duration, high intensity pulses using anything, magnetics, electricity, whatever, even mechanical fluids, you can actually, on the recovery, you can actually get like 20 to 30% more than what you put in to make it do that. So, but
right.
The guy to read about is Tapping the Zero Point Energy by Moray King. That is the absolute best book there ever was. I don't know if you can find them now. This is like 30 years ago, but they're still out there, but they're expensive. I wish you'd put it on PDF to let everybody have them, because it's a great source of material to understand what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. That just makes a good point about transcribing these shows. All these people you're mentioning in books that we need to read, that would be a handy reference to be able to go back and see all that. I'd like to segue into the
432. One more thing, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I would recommend to anybody, if you're interested in research and trying to understand and circuits and things, go to Google and type in free PDF download. Free energy PDF download, and it'll take you to a website that will let you download Don Kelly's huge book. It's like 500 megabytes, just amazing amounts of circuits, hundreds and hundreds of circuits and diagrams and different circuits that have been built over time. So if you're an experimenter, it's just a goldmine. It's free, and you go in and go through this, and you would be amazed at all the stuff that's out there. And he's letting everybody have it. I've been recommending it to people for years. Okay. Don Kelly's the guy that wrote it. It's called the Free Energy Manual.
Okay. Yeah. I will have to definitely look into that. I want to post all these things on a post once we get done. I'd like to talk a little bit about
the really interesting time
cycle. Larry?
Say what now?
Repeat the 432 frequency? And how is the natural frequency of the Earth and the way they've tuned all the electricity to create disharmony and such and so forth?
Okay, yeah. Well, let's start out with what everything is. From a photon to the entire universe, everything has three qualities: vibration, electricity, and magnetism. That's the Holy Trinity. That's the three things that every single thing that there is made up of. That means that everything has a torus field. Like our Earth's magnetic field. It comes out of one end and goes back into the other. So, if you'll think about it, our sun is not really an atomic explosion producing and consuming hydrogen. Hydrogen is a byproduct of a plasma event, an electric spark, if you will. If you look at a solar picture and watch the big arcs come off, they leave a cold spot. If you were going closer to a nuclear reaction, it would get hotter. It doesn't leave a cold spot. If you go next to a plasma event that's arced and the arc has gone away, that's where the cold spot comes from. So our sun is electric, and I believe that the empty space, what we think is empty space, is just space that hasn't coalesced yet, that hasn't combined yet, that is full of all the atoms and all of the positive and negative charge things out there that are just waiting to combine. So empty space is more full than a place where there's a planet. And if you look at the way an atom works and the way a solar system works, it's the same thing.
Right.
Also,
what
if you look...
As above, so below?
Absolutely.
Right.
And if you look at the way a motor works with a stator and a rotor, it's the same thing. Our solar system is what's generating the electric power, the magnetic power that causes our sun to burn.
Interesting.
Do you think it actually burns?
No, I don't. I think it's a plasma event that it's sparking.
Yeah.
I think that the whole surface is like a static generator, the spark balls inside the little globes, the thing that you touch and the spark draws to your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. The big scar on Mars is not a canyon caused by water. It's an electrical arc that happened either by some phenomena on that planet or by some other planet or weapon coming close enough to it to spark between the two planets.
Energy, yeah.
You can tell that because the gullies and things going into it are rounded like the splatter trough off of a weld. That's all round. rounded. There are no sharp edges on that.
Do you remember Ken Childers?
Don't think so.
Ken Childers is the guy who discovered the, he calls them charge clusters. He said by with his method, he could call, you know, normally electrons, like charges repel. So negative pushes negative, positive pushes positive. So electrons should not stick together. That's why they're so disruptive. And he was able to force electrons to clump together like grapes. And he could throw them off like a handful of grapes and blow these amazing holes in all kinds of super hard stuff. And the interesting thing is, when you look at the hole, there's transmutation that has occurred. It's not much, but it's enough. There's all these elements that suddenly appear that were never there before. But he was doing things with this clumping of electrons that I forgot what you were saying that brought that up.
There's so many amazing people out there doing just phenomenal work. It's just baffling.
I know, it's hard to keep up.
Unfortunately, Ken died a couple of years ago. Great guy. And we used to have great discussions, and I'd meet him at conferences and stuff. We'd hang out together. He used to walk around the conferences wearing fluffy bunny slippers. All these guys are these scientists are wearing suits and, you know, all formal. And
right.
Ken would wear like a sports shirt, pair of slacks, and these bunny slippers with ears. And I'd say, Ken, he said, well, I'm just going to be, he said, I'm going to be comfortable. So
that guy
had an electron microscope in his house, in his workshop,
wow.
his own electron microscope. Go to my website and type in Shoulders, and you can see all his, I got all this stuff archived on my website.
Is so it's, much stuff.
In memory of him.
Oh.
He was a great guy, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to say on your website, for the people that have been there and looked at it, you've probably not even scratched the surface. It's to be honest, it's hard to figure out how to dig into your website there, Jerry. There's so much more information there than what meets the eye at first glance.
Really, to go to Google and type whatever you're looking for, look for free energy or gravity or rejuvenation, whatever, type KetaNet, and then your search word, and it'll come up with every file on KetaNet that's related to that.
Yeah,
that's the way you do the hunt, the search. Yeah.
Right. I hope everybody caught that. If you want to find something on Keeley's site, but the point is you need to know it's there, or, you know, there's so much stuff on there that if you don't know it's there, you don't even know to look for it. But if you go to the links button on your page, and then let me get there real quick, just so I.
Really, another way is go to the archives, because I've got everything archived back since 1988. Years it's a little sloppy, but in the last few years I've been really good about it. So you can go look up every month, all the files that are posted are posted for that month, and you can go look at all of them. It's an amazing amount of inventions and ideas and theories, an amazing amount of stuff.
I've been going to your site. I started going when it was a BBS, and I have yet to actually look at everything on your site. I mean, I've browsed through a lot of stuff, but
you're an old coot if you remember BBS's.
Oh yeah. I was on your BBS back when it was a BBS. I've known about you for nearly 30 years. So I've just never had the opportunity to meet you. So I started doing this show, and I thought about you, and I said, well, I'm going to give it a try, and you responded. So here we are. The 432
frequency.
Let's go
back to the different frequencies.
Yes.
Since Hitler, we have been changed over to the 440 frequency.
Yep.
That's harmful. Our natural frequency and the frequency of our world is 432, or really, really close to that. Okay, it's not specifically 432, but real close to that. And because 440 is not in harmony, 440, that in harmony means that it's got to be a multiple of something. The same multiple has to be used for both numbers. And 440 and 432 do not have any multiples that match. So what that means is that It's like pushing against the water. You're swimming upstream. It's harder for us to receive things. This 440 frequency keeps us agitated. It keeps us dumbed down and dull-witted. It doesn't allow us to attain our full mental capacities. And that was a Hitler propaganda thing. They did that on purpose, the same as with the fluoride. But
I was thinking, Larry, I was thinking that same thing about the change of the musical scales when, and then you said that, so you must be telepathic because we're thinking on the same channel. But that's amazing.
You guys, we're going to be right.
Yeah.
Peas in a pod, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, first of all, we've got to change our frequencies. That frequency is creating odd harmonics in every single bit of electrical equipment, electronic equipment, nonlinear equipment that we have. And that's your cell phones, your TVs, your computers. All of our modern-day stuff is run on electronics. Okay? Don't want to stir the water up too bad, but that's one of the problems with our world. These electronics are putting out harmful radio waves, harmful electronic electrical frequencies and harmful magnetic frequencies. I've got an EMF tester that when I go close to my refrigerator, it screams at me. And lights go off on it and the noise goes off on it, not to say that the meter's not pegged. So there's things in your house that are really being harmful to you. Wi-Fi is one of them. Do you know that if your little girl goes from kindergarten through 12th grade in the Wi-Fi that they've got now at the frequencies that they're doing it in, she will have a 50% chance of being sterile? Do you want that for your children? Your little boys don't have quite as large a percentage, but a lot of them will get sterile. We don't want that for our kids. That's what the government wants. They want to reduce the population. Won't get into that. The frequencies, what I'm getting at, it's the frequencies that everything is broadcast in, including the Tesla equipment. Don't get me wrong. Tesla equipment is beautiful. It's wonderful. It does everything just the way it should be done. However, the frequency ranges that they are being allowed to broadcast in are harmful ranges. With a very, very minor adjustment to frequency, not even a whole kilohertz in some cases, you can change the broadcasting and receiving frequencies of everything, and it will be healthy rather than cause cancer or any of the other bad things that all the frequency generation does. So there's ways around it. It's good equipment. It works. But you guys got to think about the safety factor of what you're doing and the frequency ranges you're doing them in.
Right. Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because that seems like an important point to me.
I think that's true because you remember Sweet, Floyd Sweet, he had a thing called the VTA, and it was a free energy device, and he was getting like 1,000 watts out of it. Problem is, not only that, there's other inventors that have said the same thing, but this energy, this negative energy that they're coming through their circuits, it actually makes the people around them sick.
Yeah.
And in some places, they claim people have died being around this, and it sucks their body energy out. And Peter Kelly used to tell me that it was radionics. That'll do the same thing if you do too much scanning with radionics. That it actually lengthens your body and pulls your body energy out, and it can make you sick or kill you. That's one of the side effects of negative energy. That's why you have to have your generator out back of your house somewhere, like 100 feet from the house, like it's radioactive or something.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Anything to excess is harmful.
Mm. But yeah, there's things.
Yeah, I like the idea of frequencies that are beneficial, that are like vitamins, you know. And
right.
You just play with these frequencies. I believe that's true. the body would resonate with them and you'd get good side effects.
Well,
remember,
okay.
Oh, go ahead.
If you think about it, any 50 cycle or 60 cycle equipment will operate within 10% one way or another, plus or minus. So that means that you can go to 54 cycles and operate everything. 54 times 8 is 432. If 432 is middle A, 54 is low A. So it's all in perfect harmony. What we're doing now is we've got a choir with 1,000 beautiful harmonious voices in it, and one guy singing flat, and it makes everybody sound like garbage. So
yeah.
That's what's happening to our world.
So
if you just tune all your equipment to 54 cycles instead of 60 cycles on your generators and everything that you've got, then you will be in harmony with nature, and that particular device won't hurt you.
I think that's true.
Frequency and harmonics are very important. I think that it all ties into the Keeley and a lot of the things we're doing.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. If you think about Keeley, back, this is 1800s, you know, the frequencies he was using would have been the original, before all this Nazi incursion, would have been the original frequencies. So you wonder
if we should modify
our machines to put out those frequencies. If we're going to be experimenting with it, you should copy the guy that got the best results.
Yeah, you should use the original frequencies, yeah.
And our vision is based on frequency. Everything is based on frequency. What we perceive as solid is simply, it's got a different frequency.
Right.
Yeah.
All fascinating stuff.
You remember a Royal Rife, R-I-F-E? Yeah. He was finding out, you know, that each molecule, each bacteria, each virus has its own MOR, mortal oscillatory frequency that would kill it. If you hit the right frequencies, you can kill it. Rick Shepard, the guy in Dallas that used to do a lot of rife research, he used to go out after a rain, he'd go out and find a puddle that had stagnant water. He would take the stagnant water and go put it on a microscope that was hooked into a TV screen so you could see it in big, real big. And you'd see these planaria swimming around in the water. And he would run through a frequency list. And normally they're moving around pretty quick. But when you reach the right frequency, they stop. And then they start shaking. And as they're shaking, it seems like they're sucking air in, but they can't breathe out. So they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And their skin swells up like a balloon blowing up. And then when they get so thin, they just pop and all their guts spill out. Rick used to have these videos that we used to show us. We were amazed. We saw it live where he actually did it in front of us. So, but Rife claimed he did that for cancer and a whole bunch of other diseases, you know. And now they have the Spooky 2, S-P-O-O-K-Y 2, number 2, that you can get for about $200, the 20 megahertz version. And it'll let you, it's built in like three different sets of Rife frequencies so you can actually broadcast the Rife frequencies in your body and experiment with them. It's a great machine.
Too. Those are really, really great for a lot of people, the vast majority. But some people are so far out of tune in their body. If we don't have the proper fuel in our bodies, you can't run diesel in a gas engine. And that's the way our bodies are. And if we don't have the right fuel, some of these frequencies that the Rife shares, it will be such an opposition to us, and it will throw the bad stuff out of our body so hard that is detrimental. That will kill people.
An overload,
but just a very, very small percentage of them.
Right.
So it's just like, it's safer than the drugs we take from the AMA today. I think anything that you do other contrary to American medicine is good.
Oh, yeah. Larry, I got a question for you. You seem to know a lot about frequencies. You up for a question?
Yes, sir.
Okay. in the whole world, there's gold. You know, there's all these isotopes of gold, isotopes of everything. And each isotope has its own frequency, molecular frequency. They call them, the molecular...
subatomic frequencies.
Yeah, but each one has its own unique frequency. The question I'm asking, every wave has a phase angle, a phase. So if I was to take a piece of gold from the United States and a piece of gold from Africa and a piece of gold from Europe, and I was to be able to see the frequency, would they all be in phase, or would they be out of phase?
They would all be out of phase because the frequency of the specific area, as well as the magnetic field of the specific area, will influence that.
Now, do you know this for a fact? Has this been proven? I've never been able to find that proven.
That's why
I'm asking. Otherwise, I would not know.
I know for a fact that dolerite from Africa has different frequency properties than dolerite from America. And that's just a high crystalline form of lava that's cooled real slow.
Well, I'm not talking about frequencies. I'm talking about the phase. They'll have exactly the same frequencies, but anywhere from 0 to 360 degrees.
Go over my head. Larry? Hello? Hello? Lost connection. Hello? Don't know if we're back on yet. It looks like we're connected. I'm trying to reconnect with Gary and Larry.
Gary. Bob, is that you?
Yeah, my connection dropped. Sorry about
those
that.
Cheap computers, I know.
No, it's the internet here where I'm at. Let me get Larry back on here real quick.
He's still on, I think. He was. Oh, he's gone.
Yeah, I'm reestablishing connections here. I hope the show comes back.
And I'm in Mexico, and I got better internet than y'all got.
Yeah, how sad is that, right? Okay, I think we're back online. Yep, Grim says we're back, I think. Okay, where were we?
Phase of gold.
Phases, yeah, the phases. Larry, you had mentioned that the dolerite had different frequencies and such, and then
what is dolerite?
It's just a volcanic rock, but Challenger took a dolerite toroid, and this is why I'm so fascinated about it. We took 2 weeks of solid everyday math and figured out the proper sizes and shapes of the toroids so that the magnetic field could expand to its maximum potential. And one of these sizes, Michael Challenger found a dolerite ring, had found bunches of them all over Africa, and he took it with him in a suitcase. When they ran it through the X-ray machine, it magnified the frequency so much that it blew up the X-ray machine. Hmm. So we've been trying to get hold of one of them, and even made some out of magnesium oxide with supposedly the proper amounts of silicone and that different elements in it, but it doesn't have anywhere near the same properties.
I would pay to see that.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I'd buy the X-ray machine so we could blow it up.
Rob, what did you say? You were an anarchist?
that's what they tell
but
me.
But if this stone does actually, and I can believe that it does, we've got a sample of it that we looked under a microscope at, and the crystalline structure, although it's all hexagonal, is very jagged on the ends, and the structure is completely random. So once you get a frequency moving around in it, it would tend to stay in the ring of this donut. So that would tend to magnify it. That's how we magnify the magnetic field in our coils. So I think it's real, but I'd sure like to have it to play with. Wrap a coil around it and see what that does.
Yeah.
But we're all flat DC. We don't even pulse it.
Do you remember Hendershot?
Yeah.
Remember he had a big coil, and he had eight smaller coils around it, and he called it harmonic multiplication. Keeley used to say, he said if you take a tuning fork and you take 1,000 other tuning forks that are tuned to the same frequency, and you put them all in one room, that if you strike that one tuning fork, all the 1,000 tuning forks will come to the same amplitude, and you will have an augmentation or magnification of force. It's just a matter of converting all that mechanical energy into one combined amount of power. But that's what he says was one of the secrets to his machine. Which makes perfect sense, you know,
Exactly.
But with resonance, the whole thing about resonance is when you strike one tuning fork, the other tuning fork will come up to the same exact level. They will like water. They'll come up to the same level, and they'll both die down at the same time. Well, Hendershot was using that in his machine, and there's a guy named Scott in Seattle, and he had a machine called the PodMod that used a very similar thing, and he was claiming he was getting tens of thousands of watts out of this, but he got in some kind of attack or some health attack, and it nearly killed him, so he dropped out of it. But he had you can look up the PodMod on Keenan, PodMod. And I talked to him, he was a really nice guy, smart guy, but you can see his patent and everything. His patent is brilliant. It's just like Hendershot, which reminds me of Keeley with the tuning forks, because that's the best explanation I've ever heard. Was the 1 to 1,000, and you amplify or augment the energy by a thousand times. That's amazing.
Well, they call it
that's sympathetic resonance, and that's what the future of space flight's going to be.
I guess.
Interesting. Fascinating stuff.
We've got one coil design that's very similar to that. It uses 17 coils with a ball magnet in the vortex of each coil. You put AC to one coil, it spins that ball magnet, and that ball magnet will make all the other ball magnets spin, and you get generation through magnetic induction.
Right.
Now, I've seen 2 or 3 YouTubes like that where they have a whole bunch of magnets all on a table, and they're all spinning from one magnet spinning, and it causes through. What do they call it? Gearing is what they call it. Magnetic gearing. And it causes them all to rotate. It's amazing.
And all it takes is putting AC power to one coil, to one central coil, and that will induce all the rest of them to spin. It will cause them to spin and induce a charge into those other coils.
Mm-hmm.
Now that'll be straight DC power, but run it through an inverter.
No problem.
I think all inverters should be tuned to 54 cycles as well.
Hold on, let me send that to Donald Trump. Don, I send him stuff to his Twitter account all the time. I doubt he sees it. But.
See what they're investing in these days is something that will perpetuate the grid system. That means that there's nothing we can do to prevent that, except giving individual power supplies.
Perpetual batteries. Every appliance, every machine in the world will have its own battery tuned for that machine. You can take it anywhere in the universe and it'll work, all using conversion of zero-point energy directly to thrust or to electrical force, electricity. And that's the way it's going to be.
Or a magnetic generator.
Possibly. That would be the early version. But the ultimate version would be tapping the actual zero-point energy. But there's lots of ways to do it. You know, gravity, magnetism, inertia, electrostatic. There's lots of ways to tap into power.
Yep.
I have a question for both of y'all. Are you either both of you familiar with John Hutchison?
Oh, yeah, I know John.
Yeah. Do you know John? Have you met him? Or?
Yeah. He's got a new pledge out for money, or what do you call it, a crowdfunding.
He
just sent a new one out for some kind of making a free energy machine, I think he's calling it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, he did the experiment with the crystal the crystals, like what Larry was talking about, where you mix certain different types of crystals together, and I think you melt them, and they become like a homogenous thing, like a cake, you know. And you can put wires in, hook wires up to it, and it actually produces electricity. It sits there and creates electricity. Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that with graphene.
Mm-hmm.
Graphene painted onto carbon fiber makes a great battery. They are about 2.4 volts. And a 4 centimeter square. So that means that the future of batteries is going to be very, very light, very small, and high powered.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, I like it that way.
You bet. And once you charge them, once you put the initial charge on, they don't ever run down. It's done.
Huh. Well, I'm ready for all these things to come out today.
Yeah, that's
the Illuminati calling.
Yeah, it is.
Y'all are talking
We know who you are. We know where you are. Enter your door.
Right. I'll answer it with the 12-gauge.
What, 12-gauge wire? What?
Yeah, that's it. Let's go ahead and get into your coil, Larry. I know you've told the story many times, so just give the basic rundown and tell us all about your coil.
Okay. Once again, nothing that we have done is new and nothing that we have done is original. Okay, it's all come from the ancients. There are some Hindu yantras, the things that they look at to meditate with. Some of those are coil designs.
Right.
I saw a Persian rug from 300 AD that had a perfect induction resistance capacitance circuit in the outer border of it that was wired correctly. And it went all the way around, over and over and over. They show us things. If we pay attention to the mechanical and machine-type properties of things, rather than looking at them as a religious artifact, then we can get a little bit beyond. Okay. Back then...
Larry, Rob and I were talking about this exact thing yesterday. Remember, Rob. About the Indian blanket?
Right.
That those are patterns for circuit diagrams. All the pagodas with the curled up roof in Japan and China.
A pagoda is a proton accelerator.
they're all and crop circles, when you spin them out into three dimensional, they turn out to be machines. All these, hey, this technology has been shown to us, but we're too stupid to see it. So
that's it. That's exactly it. When I look at Egyptian hieroglyphs, I don't see words or things. I see engines and power devices and capacitors and right. Batteries. And the Ark of the Covenant was a battery. It was a big capacitor. When you've got gold on the outside, wood is the insulator. Gold on the inside, or whatever material on the inside, another metal. One of the angels was connected to the outside. The other angel was connected to the inside. Boom, you got a spark between the wings.
Sounds like an orgone box, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's the same thing. That's what the Anunnaki carried around with them. What all these little, looked like handbags that they had. That was their battery. That was their power supply. The Ankh was a method of using. The Horus had turned the earth into the power, into the completed circuit to make the Ankh work. The monoliths that they have everywhere were collecting towers for the Tesla energy that was projected out of the pyramids. You go to the monolith to charge your Ankh or to charge your battery. Moses didn't steal the only Ark of the Covenant that was there. Moses stole one of their capacitors. The Egyptians used capacitors everywhere.
This is Kathy's, the harmonic grid system. Yeah. All those things are tied together. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and that's why there were pyramids all over the world on the ley lines.
He died a couple of years ago. Bruce Cathy? I didn't know that until I saw it in an article.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. That sort of thing is we have to look beyond that. I looked at some ancient Polish runes, and out of about 20 different symbols, you can make plasma generators out of about 8 of them.
Huh.
And they make really good plasma generators. They show the spark gap. They show the contact points. And, you know, look at these things. If you were an ancient, then all of your priests would hold the knowledge. They would be the engineers and the carpenters and the mathematicians and that sort of thing, the astrologers. And the common people wouldn't know this. So it would be magic. And the sparks that came off of them would be like a god. So they used symbolism in the kind of terms that they knew to describe things in the common language that the priesthood language has been hidden from us. So we can't say the proper words in the proper language to make something happen. And I think all this information is hidden in the vault of the Vatican. Why go through the Inquisition if you're not going to gather every bit of information that every one of them had?
Yeah, I think so. You're right.
But, you know, I think there's two different sets of information, public information and information that has been hidden from us.
Yes.
Well, that's what the word occult is all about. Hidden secrets. Yeah.
Yeah. Magic is just a science that we don't know how to use yet, or that we don't understand yet.
Do you remember a movie years ago by Jack Nicholson when he was first acting? He was with Boris Karloff and Vincent Price, and the movie was called The Raven. And there were two magicians that got into a fight, and the reason they were fighting, Boris Karloff had stolen Vincent Price's wife, and they used hand magic, and they said there's three types of magic. There's the one where you use the chemicals and stuff and mix, and there's the second one where you have to use chants, and the third one where you use hand gestures, and by making specific patterns in the air, you could modify control the ether, the zero point energy, in such a way that you could cause reality to change, and Boris Karloff was trying to force Vincent Price to reveal the hand gestures that his father had taught him. His father was the greatest magician, and they could just when they had their war between the two of them. If you can get it on YouTube, but he just makes all these gestures in the air, and things come shooting off his hands like bats, and knives shoot off and flames, and it's a very stimulating movie because you think, what if they knew how to do that in the past? You know, the ancients could actually control the zero point energy and alter reality, alter matter, just by using concentrated, a sustained mind force.
Very interesting. Hello? Are we losing it again? I don't know if we're still broadcasting or not. Lost it. Reconnecting. Still reconnecting. Like we're reconnected. Hang on, folks. I'm going to try to get Larry and Jerry back on here. Skype's still trying to reconnect. Be right back. With us, waiting on Skype to reconnect here. Come on. Still down. There, it looks like it's back. We'll try again now.
There, Rob.
There you are.
Back again, just like the Lord of the Rings.
Pick today for my internet to be crap.
Stop doing crack, yeah.
All right. Let me add Larry back in here. We'll probably go ahead and run a little long just to make up for the lost time.
There we go.
Larry, there you are.
Hi.
Sorry about that. That's my internet connection dropping out on us.
Neato, Grandpa.
We were talking about taking up a donation to help you pay your bills.
No, I mean, it's all paid for. Matter of fact, I don't even pay for the Wi-Fi here. But it does.
Look what you get.
Yeah, it has a. I mean, it's good Wi-Fi. It just every once in a while, it resets, and so I mean, it goes down and comes right back. But it's a pain in the ass.
Anyways, must have voted for Hillary.
Yeah, I don't vote. But I would never vote for any of them. Anyways, where were we talking about?
Hand gestures.
Magic and, all that stuff. But I was wanting Larry to go into his coil. That was the subject we were on.
Okay. Gosh, there's...
I mean, I know you've already kind of basically explained it. Is there
any
questions?
Yeah, I think that our main thing that we do is manipulate the magnetic field. And because of the geometry and the no iron core to limit that magnetic field, we can allow the conductor to do everything that it's capable of. we have pairs of circuits. First of all, you cannot have a coil that has less than 6 circuits on it.
Okay,
that's the smallest number of circuits that you can have on a toroidal coil. So by having pairs of circuits, that gives you 2 sets of wires to magnetically interact with one another. Two different polarities to interact with one another at the same time.
Okay.
By having an empty space between each pair, that allows the magnetic field created by the pairs of wires to expand to its full extent and be as strong as it can be. And by having it that strong, that forces all of the magnetic field into the core of the donut, into the ring of the donut. And circulating in the ring, that magnifies it into the vortex. When we energize a coil, one style of a coil, it doesn't even move a compass needle from outside the coil, from the perimeter. Only over the vortex will it move a compass needle. So what that says is that your x-rays and MRIs are now going to be safe to take. This is an amazing thing. We call it core effect. Skin effect is the electron exchange that happens on the surface of every conductor. That's what we have now, skin effect. What we have by not moving a compass needle, that tells us that the electron exchange is going on in the core of the wire. And that is why it doesn't move the compass needle. And that also means that that magnetic field is inside the wire being pushed by the electrical field. And because of the geometry of the coil, that makes it all circulate. We have basically a triple Mobius wrapped around a donut, all flat. Anytime that, good hint for people, when you're making a coil, hold your hand out flat and look at how your fingers fit together. That's the way your wire wants to fit together, one right next to another. Your fingers don't come out crossed. Your fingers come out straight. That's the way the wire should be. And you should follow your pattern all the way around like that. Anytime your wires cross, that collapses the magnetic field and causes an eddy current. An eddy current makes heat. Heat in a coil means that it draws more amperage to operate and costs you more money at the power plant. So that's a big hint. Never cross your wires, your magnetic field, at anything other than 90 or 180 degrees. That odd angle will cause eddy currents again, making your coil heat up. That's where you lose your money. You're wasting the energy. Our coil at 3 times the rated amperage does not heat up. So that's a good thing.
That all makes sense to you, Jerry?
What's that?
Does that all make sense to you?
No.
No?
I'm telling you, I need to sit on paper. I need to see a circuit diagram and an explanation of what's going on to really understand it. I hear the buzzwords, but I don't see I can't see it in my mind.
Okay.
That's just the way I work.
Right.
Okay. Think of a coil with a candy cane pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Think of a toroidal coil with a candy cane pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Like a barber's pole.
And that's basically what we've got. Yeah, like a barber, okay. Like a barber's pole. Yeah, but make that into a circle.
Yeah.
And that's basically what we've got for geometry. Our pattern is such a loose spiral that it's got to be glued on every inch of the way to stay. It has to be like that in order to get it to cross at 90 degrees.
Have you gotten any of these things to be stable? Are they consistent for the power output?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And with that, have you run a house or anything or any
we
kind
haven't
of machine?
We haven't done that yet. What we want to do with them is turn them all into generators by putting a stationary magnetic field and a rotating magnetic field in the vortex of the coil. Just like an inverted V gate, if you make a ring out of that V gate and slide it into the vortex of a coil, and then make another cylindrical multipole magnet to slide into that hole, that will rotate. And depending upon the rotational speed, that's how you modulate your frequency. But that will induce the charge into the coil. That's what we want to do eventually. That's why we made these coils. And we increased the magnetic field for a hydrogen customer that we were dealing with, that once you polarize the electrolyte, whether it's water or whatever, once you polarize it, that helps to break the molecular bond of the hydrogen so that it separates easier from the oxygen and you make hydrogen more efficiently. That's why we increase the magnetic field, just playing with it. And that was just one simple pattern directional change. I encourage everybody out there, if you're playing with toroidal coils, go for it. All of them will do something. Some of them are just more efficient. And if you get your pattern right, it's not going to heat up. And that's what we need. Just think of devices that don't heat because of all the coils in them. It would
revolutionize a lot of things.
Yeah, things would last longer.
What do the Russians call coil? They call this they have their own name for it. Not tensor, not twistor. Can't think of it off the bat. I don't use it that much, but. There's a lot of talk in Russia about this particular name, and it has to do with free energy, gravity control, everything. They say it controls everything, but I forget the name of the actual word.
I'm not sure. Are you talking about scalar waves?
No. Scalar.
Okay. I
think it starts with a T. I can't.
Tensor.
No, not tensor. Something about twisted. Twisted vortexes.
Think of your toroidal shape. That creates a twisted vortex tornado pattern out of the center of it, out of the hole. And that's the energy field. And when the coil that we've got that won't move a magnet, it reads, you can read that energy field above the hole. So every toroidal shape, which is everything, has that vortex in them. And the reason that we don't understand that is because we see it as throwing one rock into the puddle and the perfect waves coming out from it. That's not the way of the real world. The real world, everything has this field, and every field associated with another field distorts the fields around it. So we don't see a real field. We see all of this 440 frequency coming in to further distort our fields.
Got it. It's called torsion field. T-O-R-S-I-N.
Torsion field. Everything has a double helix coming out of it. Think of a magnet as propelling little magnets out the end of it. I know that's not what it is. They're not physical, but
gearing.
Think of it like that.
That's the magnetic gearing.
Yeah, and they're spinning. And the North Pole spins one way and the South Pole spins the other way. and when they enter the magnet from into the other end, it goes to the to what I call the 9 point or the zero energy point between the north and the south. But that's not a zero energy point, because that's where all the energy happens, in the transition between north and south pole. That's the number 9 spot on the vortex mass symbol. That's the transition point where everything happens, where you switch from positive to negative. And everything is doing that. And because of that, we can get hold of these magnetic fields and manipulate them by changing the direction of the electric flow that creates the magnetic field.
Are you talking about the block wall? B-L-O-C-H?
Yes.
When it's like at the equator of the Earth, where the north flips to south.
Yep.
That's the block wall, yeah.
Yep.
That's what they call it. You can do Telenet block wall, B-L-O-C-H, W-A-L, two different words, and it'll come up with a diagram showing that in magnets and how that, that was discovered by somebody else, but it was really proven best, I think, by Rawls and Davis in Florida. I met Rawls, but Davis had died years before. But Rawls was really a nice guy. We spent all day swapping information. Really a nice guy. And he knew a lot of stuff. Yeah.
These are the rules that people are forgetting that are making these coils. They're leaving these little small details out.
When you think of a magnetic field, though, most people think that the North Pole, the energy comes, it goes into the North and comes out of the South, falls back around and re-enters north, but it doesn't. It twists when it goes through the equator.
Yes.
That is the block wall.
Yes.
And that
yes.
twist is what gives us the heads up for power, because it turns out the south pole energy is stronger than the north pole energy.
Huh. Yep.
That's for energy if we can tap into it.
David LaPointe in his primer field videos explains this real well. And demonstrates it with steel balls.
Yes, I've seen that.
He's amazing, done amazing work. He's sort of fallen off the world with the primer field videos, but if watch all three of them if you're going to watch them, because they are amazing.
Yeah, they're very well produced. Really good graphics, good videos. Yeah.
Say that name again, Larry.
David LaPointe and Primer Fields.
Primer Fields.
1, 2,
and 3.
Okay, I was just typing that in the chat room so I'll remember. Okay.
Yeah, they're excellent. But it demonstrates the way of the world, and that's what got us into looking into bowl magnets. And if you'll slice your torus in half and just wrap the cone shape that's left on the top and the bottom, energize that, that'll double the magnetic field, which again reduces the resistance of the wire. The only drawback to doing that is that those particular inside coils will heat up.
Yeah.
So just use bigger wire.
Yeah. That reminds me of years ago. Have you ever heard of a guy named Waxpress, W-A-C-H-S-P-R-U-S-S? He has a patent on a monopole. Supposedly, you can't have monopoles, but he found a geometry using, 1, 2, 3 magnets, and you have one going up and down, one going east and west, and one going the middle of east and west. There's six. You have a total of 6 magnets, and all of them are pointing in, the south pole facing out, the north pole facing in, and this thing's put inside of a ball, so that ball is a monopole, pure south pole energy or pure north pole energy. And this guy, he built his patent is a toy that you can float these balls over a table, and it's got like a little XY thing where you can make it float across the toy surface. But he was using superconducting wire and making a machine. He'd go out on the beach, and he would pull this wire down in this configuration on these magnets, and the thing would shoot off into space. And he started charging people $5,000 because he kept losing his his experiment. I got a call from a guy in Atlanta, and he was telling me, he was asking me if I knew of a really powerful power supply. He's real paranoid, sounded like he's being chased or something. And he said he had built a waxproof coil that was 3 foot in diameter, and he said he was running off a house current, and it was being rectified to DC, but the wires, the sun would float in the air in his room, and the thing would get so hot that the wires would start to glow, and he had to unplug it. So he wanted to make its own power coil, and then I told him about the using superconductivity to keep it super cold, and he wouldn't have a problem with that if he could power it. So, and then I heard from him twice, and I didn't hear from him again. But waxproof, you can look it up on the internet. Go to Google Patents and type in waxproof, I believe, or press. I think it's press, press, and it'll come up with his machine. It's real easy to build. Anybody can build it and test, experiment with it. You can have weird effects without, you know, a monopulse. So.
Yeah, there's a bunch of free energy devices out there, and yeah, most of them are pretty simple. It's a matter of logic. It's just logical thinking. Like the Stirling engine, beautiful thing. Run magnets, turn a motor shaft, take the power out of the motor. That's a great deal. That can work for everybody. To get enough out of that to power a house would have to be a rather large motor. Oh, yeah. But you can do it. And make three or four of them. Use little motors. Power different, to have different rooms with a different motor.
You know, that's what Dean Kamen, K-A-M-N, he's using Stirling motors to condense water from the air. He's got all these coils, and he runs the Freon to cool it, and then the water condenses on the coils. And so they have these villages in Africa that are miles and miles from the nearest water source, and they make this thing work 24/7. And they've got one that's solar powered using a parabolic dish, and it produces. All you got to do is have a different, the right kind of refrigerant with the right kind of a phase change, where it changes from a liquid to a gas at a certain temperature, and then the gas is high pressure, and it goes to a pump, and the pump would pump the Freon to cool the coils, and then the hot gas would, you put it down underground to a series of coils, and the ground is always 68 degrees Fahrenheit, 6 feet down. So it would change it from a phase of hot gas to a cold liquid, and you pump that back up to the solar, the parabolic dish, and the sun would heat it back up again really quick. And so you have this high pressure and this continuous looping circuit, so you're getting all this free energy for nothing, just from refrigerant. So, but you bring all the water you want anywhere in the world, you know, using this kind of thing, or electricity or power. So there's your free energy device right there, where you have sun. You know, nighttime, you're screwed, or cloudy weather. It still works in cloudy weather, but it works better with, you know, empty skies. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we're going to be real interested in, is increasing the amperage output of solar panels. If we can get, instead of getting 5 milliamps out of a 3-volt solar panel, you can get 30 amps.
Yeah. Well, you've seen the... you know, the guy Mills, who came up with Hydrinos years ago, and now he's got this new thing called sun cells, and they claim they can create these basically plasma spark gaps to zap silver and make the silver liquid. And when the silver is liquid, it glows really super bright like a sun. And then they have all these solar cells mounted around it, and they're claiming to get out, you know, tens of thousands of watts of power. Now, I haven't seen it actually measured, but it was on CNN of all places announcing this new free energy technique. Or about, look it up, SunCell, SunCell. Yeah, his name is Mills, Stanley Mills. I think the company's called Brilliant Power, I believe, brilliantpower.com. I don't know if that's the actual email URL, but look up SunCell and it'll come up with, and look for Mills, and it'll give you all the details that they've posted so far. But I haven't seen any tests, you know, showing how much power in and out, but it's something really amazing, like, you know, like 10 watts in and like, you know, a million watts out, that kind of incredible efficiency, if that's true, you know. But I don't really have that much confidence in Mills, because he's been touting Hydrinos for ages and still nothing's come of that, and you don't see them running houses or running cars or anything, and that always bothers me.
That's the main test right there. Can you run your house on the damn thing?
That's right. Show me the beef. Where's the beef?
That's where it's at. That's the goal. Be able to run your house on it.
Oh, you were asking before about to mention the current hot topics for free energy. One is the sun cell happening right now. The other is Tiwari's generator, back EMF generator in India, and I believe it's 130% efficient. And they have a big factory and they're making these things and they're going to sell them first in India. And the third thing is Rossi's ROSSI, his coal fusion device, which is claiming like a 10,000 watts or something, or from like 5 watts, you know, some incredible thing. But it's you look it up. They got pictures of the thing glowing. It's glowing red, and when it reaches a certain temperature, it produces all this extra heat, and you convert the heat to electricity, and that's how they get their power. You know, something about free energy, a lot of free energy people, they always test their machines with light bulbs or with inductive motors. So they always risk a lot of efficiency problems and measurement error problems because you get back EMF and spikes and all kinds of strange phasing and things with motors. The most trusted way, I think, is to actually power something to do with calorimetry, where it's a heat, a resistive heat box that you'd heat it up to like 5,000 watts. There's no chance of phases, no chance of spikes or any kind of weirdness, no chance of miscalculating, because this thing's generating 1,000 watts of pure power coming from the thing's running at like 500 degrees Celsius or something like that, and it's generating all this power. There's no way that can be cheated on. It's the absolute best way to test a truly free energy device. Remember Hal Puthoff in the Institute of Advanced Studies in Austin? He came up years ago with the 1 watt challenge. He said all these people that talk about all these free energy devices, they're always saying 10,000 watts, 100 watts, 100,000 watts, some ungodly number, running it on 18-gauge wire, which is not possible because the wire would pop like a fuse. And he said, I just want to see generate 1 watt where the thing is producing its own energy without a battery, without any power source, and it's feeding itself, and it's providing an extra 1 watt. He said, if you do that, you win. Because if you can generate 1 watt, you can scale it up to generate 1 million watts.
Yeah.
But nobody has been able to match to do his 1 watt challenge. No matter who it is, they can't come up with that one watt. That's just 1 watt. Is that too much to ask? But no, you're going out saying 10,000 watts or 1 million watts, but you can't even do 1 watt. So shut up, you know. So.
yep.
But he's right, you know.
Yeah,
got the crap.
When is this
going to stop? It's like right now with fake news in the media, you know. All we hear is fake,
well,
and con artists and people trying to rip you off and sell you a PDF, a book for $50 that gives you all the secrets of the Howard Johnson magnetic motor. You know, something that's been published for ages, so.
Right. Yeah, there's always somebody out there trying to make a buck.
I can see that, but, you know, don't be a crook about it, and for God's sake, don't claim. I see it all the time, people claiming they invented something that somebody else invented, you know. And you go through and show them the whole thing with lifters, the electrostatic things that float in the air. The guys that did that were doing that back in the 50s, you know.
Right.
And these guys today, we're the ones that invented that old BS. I posted on my website, here's the original guys that did it. You think the new guys give credit to the old guys that originally did it? No. They want you to think they did it. So.
Right.
My favorite book back in the 50s was Popular Mechanics and Popular Science.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And all the old electronic experimenter books, I love those. Yeah.
You told me about a couple of things you've personally witnessed yourself, Jerry. What were those?
The first one would be Mr. Wilson. Jack Veach, who's dead now, lived. He said there was an article in the newspaper in Fort Worth, and they were this guy had written in. No, that's a different story. it's true. It's an article in the paper, and he showed me the article, and it was about a guy named Mr. Wilson. The guy's like 80 years old. Lives out in the country, way out in the country, and he ran a greenhouse, and that's what he did when he was running his business. So he agreed to let me come out and visit him. So I drove miles and miles to go out in the deep country, the deep woods of Texas, and finally got to the house, and he takes me out to his prefab building, and in it he had this 6-foot wooden disc It was basically a tabletop that was about an inch, maybe an inch and a half thick, that he bought from Home Depot. And he had nailed nails into it at the shape of a V, so it would act like the guide for a big V belt. So he could, and he had a big, huge long belt connected to this. I think it was three alternators, and they were all tensioned, you know. And as these one motor, and the motor drove this thing, which would drive this big old wheel, and the wheel would be spinning, and it would come back, and the inertia from the wheel, the inertia comes from gravity, would come around and add extra force to the alternators to give him extra power. And he was powering all kinds of stuff, drills and motors, running all the continuous while this thing was running, and it was generating, lights, everything, all inductive loads, heat loads, everything. And I said, Mr. Wilson, how long have you run this thing? And he said, the longest I've been able to run it was about 3 days. And he said, and then them nails, they come a flying. it's that, you know, that country talk, you know. He's such a cool old guy. And so he said, son, he said, I'm old now. He said, I'm going to show you the secrets of this. And he said, I'm going to tell you, I've never told anybody. Only my helper, he had a black guy helping him. He said, only my helper knows this. I'm going to show you. He said, you pass this around. And he said, you see these alternators? These are the old style generators from 1964 and before, when they used big ass magnets in them.
Interesting.
The new ones all use, and they use coils. And they and inductive coils to create their magnetic fields in a coil. That's how they create their electricity. The old ones actually took it from magnets. He said it won't work with these inductive coils. You got to use the 1964 and earlier. He said, and then you can make it get all the free energy you can want. So I remember when he was through. It was a real hot sunny day, and his wife called, and a little old lady, and she came out and she had this silver tray, and we're sitting on his front porch in these rocking chairs. Drinking, I think it was sweet tea. She's like from Georgia. She said, "Hun, would you boys like some sweet tea?" I just remember that. It was so, they were so such nice people. Well, he's probably long dead, but I never forgot that. The secret was that they said 1964 and earlier for the, you need the solid, the real magnet. Remember, they had those big old magnets that were real heavy.
Yeah.
Used to take those things apart and use those magnets to play with. The other one was a guy named. Oh, God, what's his name? He was a teacher at a college there in Terrell, Texas, and he claimed he used to work for oil drilling companies where they would go out and use dynamite to create explosive charges, and they'd measure the reflection, the acoustic reflection of the earth, and that's how they could tell where these wells were of oil, pools of oil.
Right.
And he said he noticed sometimes that he got more energy coming back than what they actually sent out. And he started looking into it, and he claimed it tied into the ionosphere or something like that. But he was able to build this circuit. There was a off-the-shelf Radio Shack CB radio transmitter, and he had built this little circuit that was getting, it was two or three times more power than it was receiving than what it was actually sending out. And what made him so believable was, when he agreed to have this meeting with us, he said he had told us to come out there, and I had been working all night and I was tired, and I thought he meant to come out at night, but he meant to come out in the morning when he had a press conference. So all my people, we get ready to go out there, and we drive, there's like 40 cars. It looked like a funeral cortege driving out 30 miles outside of Dallas to Terrell. And we get out to the college, and it's all dark. There's nobody there. So I called this guy up, and Raymond, called him up, and he said, well, where were you guys? We had the press conference this morning at 8 o'clock. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant at night, not in the morning. He said, well, I'll come over there. So he comes over to the university, to the college, and he takes us to a room. And all this. He said, well, we can't use this room. That's where they had done the demonstration in the morning. We'll have to use another room. So we took all his machines, his circuits, put them in a box, carried them over to this other room where they had big tables, and we opened, set the whole thing up. And he set the whole thing up right there in front of us. And then we had, Dan and I had meters, and we were measuring the energy coming out. We didn't have a scope. But you could see the energy going being sent out was like 20 volts, and the circuit was picking up, I believe it was 40 volts. So it was doubling the circuit. And it was only about 20 feet apart between the transmitter and the receiver. And we were just, everybody there was just amazed, because How do you get twice as much power? And he claimed that the circuit was tuned into this earth frequency, and he was actually extracting energy from the earth. And he said if the circuit was bigger, he thought I could get more power. But for this size circuit, I can only get like twice as much. So, but he was getting like 40 volts out at the same amount of amperage as what he was sending. Yeah, because it was twice as much. But what's his, Rhodes, R-H-O-D-E-S. Raymond Rhodes was his name. Really interesting guy, yeah. But that really puzzled us because we didn't understand how he could do that. And we had helped him set it up. It's not like he had time to rig anything, you know.
Right.
It was the same with Mr. Wilson, you know. I was right there, and you could see it was just simple as it could be. There's no hidden magnets or anything. It just it was what the man said it was. So.
Yeah. Have you ever done any experimenting with Fresnel lenses?
Oh, yeah. I have one right here. Yeah. I burned a lot of ants, yeah.
Among other things.
Yeah.
I combine that with the Stirling engine.
Solar cell.
And, huh?
You concentrate on solar cells. You focus it on solar cells, you get a lot more power out, too. The only problem is it gets so hot it'll melt the solar cell.
Yeah, that's
you know, in space, the ones they have in space, they actually are special materials where they can get use the sun and use Fresnel lenses to concentrate. There's actually machines that you can get panels that have Fresnel lenses built in. In like an array, a grid, of a whole bunch of them, and it's focusing energy on solar cells, and they're getting a tremendous amount more power out because they're concentrating the sunlight. So, and of course, the new ones are they have a special material in there that not only collect the infrared radiation, but this new material will collect a rainbow of different frequencies. So you get not only the infrared, you also get the ultraviolet and the red, the blue, and the green, all the other colors. So you get a lot more energy out because you're collecting it all, not just the one thing. So, yeah. I think the best they've got so far is about 30% efficiency. So it's still not enough. But you know, when you got an array and you've got, you know, ten or twenty or something, you get enough power.
Yeah.
I think the solar dish is the best way. The problem is, you know, is what happens at night? How do you store power? So a lot of people are using compressed gas as one way. Compressed gas. And otherwise, your batteries, but batteries, you know, they're a problem. So,
I think that passive is the best way to use solar. Use it to heat with. Use it to heat your water. Use it to heat your house. You can have a room with rock salt in it that'll store the heat for 18 hours.
Oh, yeah. I know a guy that he built the house and he put all these rocks underneath the floors, and they had all these pipes running through them. And during the day, the sun would heat up the whatever liquid he had in there, and it would run through these pipes. And his house was like 72 degrees all the time. Year round, it'd be freezing snow and ice cold outside. And if there was any, the least little bit of sun, even when it's cloudy days, his house was always comfortable. Willis Winters in Lubbock, Texas. Yeah.
Yep. For your electricity, you can have thermal electricity source with your solar source, with your passive solar source, and that would supply your energy needs.
Yeah. Use a Tesla turbine because it's a lot more efficient to be able to drive a generator to reduce your electricity. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, what I'm getting at, I guess, is that there's so many different answers out there.
There is.
All we need is the opportunity to make them happen.
Yeah.
And there's certainly elements that are keeping us from it.
Have you seen these solid state refrigerators that use a battery? It doesn't use coils or anything. It uses a thermionic module that when you put DC into it, it takes low voltage, high current. But on one side of the module, you get heat, and the other side, you get cold. So cold, it'll ice over and produce frost.
Huh.
And then they have a fan that blows across that, a thermionic module. They call them Peltier Junction, P-E-L-T-I-E-R.
Okay.
And there was a guy that got a patent years ago. He had a cylinder that was about 6 foot long, and it was, I think it was about a foot wide, and he had thousands and thousands of these Peltier Junctions all connected in arrays, you know, grids. And half of this thing would be above ground, with the sun focusing on this cylinder, and half of it would be below ground, so that it would get that 68 degrees Fahrenheit, and the heat from the sun would produce, he claimed, in his patent, he claimed that it was actually tested to produce 20 kilowatts of power, 20,000 watts, and all it had to do was, half of it was underground, half of it was above ground, but the rotation, the heat differential between the two and the sun produces 20 kilowatts. And anyways, supposedly about 2 days after the patent came through, this guy mysteriously died.
Yeah. So
that's why nobody hears about that.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Seems to. Like Garrett.
Oh, Garrett, Dad Garrett in Dallas,
Dad,
yeah.
Yeah, Dad Garrett in Dallas, the water carburetor guy.
Hydrogen reactor, water reactor, yeah. And he was driving that car all over Dallas. Supposedly, remember the old Pathé news films that they used to do and show at the movies, before the movies?
Right.
They actually took film of him. They took film of Clem, too, driving his car around Dallas. And they took film of Dad Garrett driving his car. Yeah.
A lot of people coming out of Dallas.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that
I'd like to see those. I've never been able to find those films. I think they might have. I don't know. They're somewhere. They must be out there.
Yep. When you were in the States, you lived in Dallas area?
Yeah, I lived in Dallas. I'm from Texas. My family's up north, near down from Amarillo. So.
Okay.
They're still there. I go visit them about once, twice a year.
Guys in the chat room were all trying to guess what your accent was. They were guessing you were from Tennessee, but
that's a New Jersey accent, isn't it?
Oh, no. No sweet pea for you.
Right.
I got that from Georgia. You go into every place you go, the waitress in the restaurant, "Hun, would you like some more sweet pea?" Those people are so real, man. They give you the shirt off their back. You go up north, man, the people are so, I think they creep me out. In California, in California, all they care about is how much money you got. What kind of Rolex, what kind of car you drive, plastic people. In New York, when I was up there, the people were they were always grumpy and mean. They didn't laugh. They had no sense of humor. And I'd be cracking up all the time, and they're acting like I'm retarded or something. But I like to, Texans all joke around. So, but you go south, in the south, in the north, the southerners, man, they're just, they're just so much fun. Oh.
I say it all the time. Yeah. I love the South.
Hurricane parties.
The weather.
Yeah, down in Louisiana. Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah.
But you got the best weather of all down there where you're at, Jerry.
Oh, yeah. It is the best weather. It's the best in the world. Chapala. Yeah.
Lake Chapala, Mexico.
Yeah.
I'm only a block
from the lake.
Nice.
I could probably pull the webcam, the laptop out there and show you the water.
Well, let's go fishing.
Oh, there ain't no. You don't want to eat the fish out of that lake. It's polluted as hell.
Okay, I was asking, is it clean?
No.
No.
That's why they don't have any water sports or anything here. The water's too dirty. Plus, it's too shallow. It's between 3 and about 30 feet all over. It's the second biggest lake in Mexico, but it's only about 30 feet deep max. But where I've seen a fisherman go out there dragging his net, and the water only comes up to like their waist, and they're out like a half a mile from the shore. It's so shallow.
Real shallow.
When I first came here in 2001, the lake was going through like desertification, and it was like you had to go like a half a mile to get to the water from the beach, from the pier. And it's been like 25 years since it had it full. So I started studying the weather patterns in 2001, and it took me till 2002 I had it figured out. And then I had some friends that told me how to build a cloudbuster. So I built a cloudbuster and set it up, and there were no clouds. I had this thing pointing at the sky, and there's no clouds in the sky. I've got pictures of it. And then within an hour, you can see the wisps are forming. And within 5 hours, the whole sky was covered with clouds and started raining. And I let that machine run for 3 months, and every night we'd have rain. And then all the newspapers, and that year, they were saying, "Why are we having so much rain this year? What's going on?" So it's 25 years, and suddenly we're having all this rain. That was my machine. But I kept it a secret experiment. And this type of thing, it creates what Mary Hardy calls it a standing columnar wave. It's like a capacitor. It charges up, and it'll last for about 10 years once you do it. And then over time, it'll get weaker and weaker and weaker. And sure enough, in 2011, the rain started going down. We didn't get as much as we had been getting.
Yeah.
But it filled the lake back up to the stairs, and everybody was freaking out.
Is that like those orgone tube things?
Yes, exactly. Right, a cloud buster is an orgone tube, yes.
Yeah, okay. That's what I'm thinking of. Okay, cool.
And I've got it on my website showing you how I did it, so you can do it yourself. In fact, I was promoted on people on my website that, you know, when Texas was drowning, they were in a major drought,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
cracked soil.
When I
was up there, my brother-in-law said, check this shit out. We go out. He said, you used to dig down about 6 inches and get grub worms to go fishing. Look, watch this. And we went down like a foot underground, and it was just dry. The dirt was dry as it could be. A foot underground.
Yep.
Yeah. And so then suddenly I was posting all this stuff on the internet on my website about and urging people. I said, build one of these cloud busters. Going to start making clouds. Suddenly Texas is flooded. And these Oregon people were cussing me out, and they're saying,
wow.
You shouldn't be talking this stuff. I said, you know, the plans are all over the internet.
Yeah,
and I said, I didn't have one to do that. If people choose to do that, it's their business. So.
Yeah,
but sure enough, Texas was flooded. It was a mess.
They got
all the water they wanted.
Uh-huh.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. A friend of mine got flooded out in that big flood down in San Marcos.
Yeah.
My co-host, Steve.
It was a mess. They had a lot of YouTubes about it. So. Yeah.
Very interesting. Well,
we tried to hook up with the people that own all the casinos and stuff. One of my friends, his wife works for all these rich people, so and she knows all these people that are into casinos and things. And we were trying to get them to fund us to come up there and fill up Lake Mead. You know, Lake Mead is down almost to the turbines.
Yeah.
The water's gone down so deep.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, when Lake Mead goes down, Las Vegas is going to be a ghost town. All those billions of dollars they got invested, it all goes to nothing because they won't have no
water.
There's no electricity.
Yeah. No water,
there's
no
crops, no food, no gas. Yeah, there's going to be a ghost town. So somebody better get on the stick. Yeah.
Water is life. Absolutely.
But that'd be fun to go out there and refill that lake. So, yeah.
Larry, you have any subjects you want to bring up or anything else you want to talk about?
No, we're getting close to the end here. I'd just like to encourage everybody that's going, that's doing any kind of projects. You're all doing good work. You're all dedicated. Don't lose faith. Don't get discouraged. Just keep on. Keep trying. Prove your stuff works. Demonstrate it. Get people to see it. Get people to use it. Just keep the faith, guys. It will work.
Good advice.
You're the future.
Good advice in any area. Jerry, anything you want to bring up or talk about?
I think I've talked way too much. It's supposed to be hearing more about Larry. This is Larry's part of the show.
Nobody's complaining.
Hey Larry, what do you think about Oregon?
It's beautiful. I know some people that are doing it, that are using these tubes, and one of the friends that I've got is in Australia, and he's managed to divert a hurricane with it. So
is that Peter? His name's Peter, or is it Ash?
Neither one. This is a guy named Snow.
Or
at least that's how I know him. That may not be his real name. But he taught me how to make them. And when I go fishing, I take mine with me.
Right.
Now, if you start it out early in the morning, you can either make it go away or make it come, whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, there was a guy named, what's his name, Peter something. Anyway, he was in the news because he has this, it's like a 6 or 8 foot disc. It's a disc, but it's got mirrors on it, and he's got infrared heat lamps, and he can aim this thing up in the sky, and he can make it rain just about anywhere in the world. And he's got all these videos. He shows when he starts and what he's trying to do and the end result. And we've been in contact a lot on the internet. He's a really nice guy. We tried to get him to come to Lake Mead, But you started it out saying you'd do it for $50,000 and bring the machine over here and actually do it. And then suddenly he got involved with somebody who was saying, oh, no, we want $400,000. These are casinos. We want $400 million. You know, they went crazy with the greed thing, you know.
The greed system,
that's one of the things. Yeah, that's what screws up all this. How many machines have gone to nothing because people got greedy?
Because of greed.
No.
Yep.
And wanting to keep tight lids on it. But I know you, I think I asked you about it on one of the other shows you were on, Larry, about the Joe cell. I know you have a couple of things on your site about that too, Jerry.
Yeah, Joe cell, oh yeah. You know, they claim they can run the whole car. You know, some people claim they're actually running their cars on those things, which is basically orgone. It's an orgone condenser.
Yeah, orgone generator.
Yeah, just vaporize everything and it runs easier. Runs better.
That's a really strange story. That whole Joe cell, there's a lot of spooky stuff involved with that.
They basically told him to shut up.
Yeah.
Grandpa had a quart jar for his carburetor bowl, and that's what was heated up by the engine block on his tractor.
He burned the vapor.
Just burning vapor.
I got two huge papers on vapor carburetors, not only patents, but how it's all done. It was sent in by a guy who worked for some guy that was selling a chemical that would let you run your car on like 60% water and 40% gas or even up to 70%. But he wouldn't give out the secret. So this guy got mad at him. So he said, I'm going to reveal all the secrets if you'll publish them. So send them to me, and I posted them on KeelyNet. So he's got a carburetor, KeelyNet carburetor, and it'll pull them up. But he said he was using a detergent, what they call a surfactant, which is a detergent. And it's what causes the water molecules to separate. So that when you mix it with when you mix the surfactant with water and gas, and then you mix it all up, the gas will actually blend with the oil, with the water, and you can burn it all as one fuel. And that's what he's doing in cars. And he was getting, I believe it was 70 up to 70% water with 30% of gas and some of the surfactant. But in this, these two documents I have on the web, it gives all the details.
I have to look that up too. So many fascinating things, Jerry, on your site and out there. Not enough time to go over it all. I'd like to have you back, Jerry. Maybe on a regular basis if you're willing. Maybe.
I'm waiting to see Larry when he's going to get all this stuff on paper. I want to look at those circuits.
That was my next thing. Is what is the status, Larry? What are we looking at on time wise for your funding and getting the production going on that?
We're still looking for funding. We're exploring. Like,
I got you. I got your fund. I got your funding. I got your funding. Go to Indiegogo, IndieGogo, and set up a crowdfunding project. You come up with an article, give us your whole story, and if you can get enough people out there talking about it, people will donate money, $10, $20, $100, $200. And the good thing about it, this is donations. You don't have to pay this back.
Right.
Now there's Kickstarter. Kickstarter only works in the United States. Indiegogo works all over the world. Kickstarter, you set your goal. Your goal is like, your goal is $50,000. You don't get the money until you get the $50,000. Then you get the money, and they get a percentage. But with Indiegogo, every time somebody sends a donation, they take out, I think, 15%, and they give you the rest. So you're getting money coming in all the time from these donations.
It's steady
stream. Indiegogo, everybody should do it. Everybody should do it. There's another one called GoFundMe, GoFundMe. That's the one that John Hutchinson's using, and he seems to be getting results with that.
Excellent.
But the key is you got to get it in Twitter. You got to get it on Facebook. You got to get it out there where people will know about it, and if possible, get people to write articles about it and get newspapers, and especially on the internet. Get it in the news if you can possibly do it. And then always refer back to your crowdfunding project at Indiegogo with the address. And people go there and they can donate money with PayPal or with credit card. And you can't, man, Indiegogo, you can't mess up because you're getting paid all the time. But Kickstarter, you got to wait till it's all there, and only when it's all there to get it. But a lot of times people don't make it. They'll say 50,000, they'll get to like 39,500, and then when it doesn't make it by the end of the time, because they give you a time you have to finish.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the money by that time, they refund all the money to the people that sent it in. But with Indiegogo, you get paid regardless, and you just take their percentage. Yeah, so go for it.
Well, Larry, if you're willing,
but that
to
might
do
get that might
like
get
that,
you the money, Larry.
If you're willing to do it, I'm willing
like
to help promote
start.
It. So, good ideas, Jerry. Thank you.
Yes.
For everybody, and if you got a project,
yeah.
and you have faith in it, yeah. Be sure to make it as visual as you can. People like pictures, but they want enough detail that they can get some understanding, and then they'll say, hey, you know, that makes sense. So, and especially make some YouTube, and you can attach the YouTube links to your Indiegogo, so people will go right to YouTube and see all your stuff. So you can really, really doctor it up and make it as wide as possible news-wise. So.
Well, I'd definitely like to do this again. Maybe
Rob, you could do that too for your show.
Yeah.
Help provide more stable internet access.
Right. You know what? I can't. The way this park is set up, they have Wi-Fi here. It's on Comcast, but we can't get. I'm in an RV park, and we can't get our own internet because the Xfinity screws up the internet for the rest of the park. Anyway, long story. But that's all good. It's mostly pretty solid. I mean, when it goes down, it comes right back up. I mean, usually a couple times it went down for a couple days, but I definitely would like to have you both on again, maybe in a month or so, and touch base and see where everybody's at and see if there's any new things to discuss.
Larry, do you have a website other than Facebook?
No, we don't. I haven't done any of that yet.
You should do that. You know, Wix, W-I-X, they have I don't like their thing, but it's an easy thing if you want to set up a website. They got all these templates that are all built in. You just pick the style you want, and you just put your information in, and it builds a page. They give you a site and everything. Personally, I like owning my own site, but you come up with your own name. You call it freeenergy.com and rent that name, and you pay it by the year. It's like $15 a year, and then you pay a server. It'll host your site. Like I pay like $500 for every 2 years, but I have like 12 sites on it. So
yeah, I have.
It's good to have name recognition, you know, instead of because otherwise you're going wix.com/energy/news/. You don't want that. You want flat out LarryWoods.com. Boom. You know, people easy to remember.
Okay. So. You have a name, an actual business name, don't you, Larry? What was
it called? Limitless Energy Technologies. Yeah.
There you go. Get out and buy that name right now.
Do you own that
before
domain?
Somebody else buys it?
No, we don't own it.
You better go out and buy the name. It's $15.
You
better live for 1 year.
If you want help, Larry, I have.
We're incorporated under that name. Does that count?
No.
Yeah, but you need to get the name before somebody else does.
Yeah,
because they're going
to
go out and buy it.
Okay.
I can help you with that, Larry. I have hosting, and I'll host your website and help you put one together and all that.
Yeah, we'll look into that.
In
thank you.
That, I will volunteer to help you put a website together, and I have the hosting to put it up on. So we can do all that. Any
that's
last thoughts?
And now it's a matter of getting him to transcribe the voice to the actual print, because you're going to have to be able to print
as far as the show goes.
Yeah, I've got all of it down on paper and abstracts and things like that. All the things to get started, we just haven't got the money to do it yet.
Well, and go to some college and hire you some little girl to come in, little girl in secretary class, and get her to come in and work for you. They work cheap. Get you an apprentice. They work for nothing.
Yeah.
Right. There you go. All righty, guys. Well, it's been very interesting. I really appreciate both of you guys coming on the show and sharing all your thoughts and information.
That's been fun. Not to meet you, Larry.
Nice to meet you too, Jerry. And thanks for having us, Rob. We had a ball today, at least I did.
Let's all keep in touch and let's make this thing happen.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. You done good.
Thank you, Jerry.
So, you're talking about stuff too, huh?
Sort of. I mean, I work for the DEA, but I just push a lot of papers.
Oh, that was good.
I don't go on the show.
I like that.
Anyways, I really appreciate you guys coming
on. He's multitasking.
All right. All right. Well, I really appreciate it. You guys have been listening to the Smoke and Mirror Show. We like to bring you exciting and useful information here. So stay tuned. Next week, we will be interviewing Jennifer Ruby, talking about land patents and status, such things. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll see you on Saturday.